As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
What follows may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The world is full of stories. Stories of mysteries. Of curiosities. Of oddities. Join Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
We had big plans for yesterday, lots of things on the agenda, but your entire day was spent nursing a woodpecker back to health.
Yeah.
He flew into our window.
It was terrible. And as soon, like, that sound is sickening. And as soon as you hear it, you know exactly what that sound is.
Yeah.
You know what the thunk of a bird hitting a window is.
We have these big windows in the front of our house. And this has happened a couple of different times, all of them ending tragically. But in this case, and I think it was because it was a woodpecker and they have stronger heads, you put him in a shoebox and nursed him back to health.
Yeah, he did really well. And then he, he scooted out of the box. And you can actually follow the journey of the woodpecker on our Twitter page. I did document it. Eventually he made his way to a tree and all was well. And then you had quite the experience later in the day.
I did. I was sitting out on the deck and this woodpecker, now granted they all look very similar, but a woodpecker that looked just like the one that you nursed back to health flew up, landed on the railing of the balcony and just sat there 3 feet away from me, looking me right in the eye and tweeting, just ruffling his feathers. This went on for, I would say, 10 seconds, and then he flew off. It was almost like he was saying, hey, thanks, ape-like creatures who live in a big green box.
Now, you said a couple times I nursed him back to health. I did no such thing. I just made sure he didn't get eaten by something while he recovered. Someone tweeted at me, there's some sort of thing that happens when a bird gets stunned, and it takes a couple hours for them to kind of recover their equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
So in that meantime, you just have to make sure that something doesn't eat them. That's all I did.
Right.
So you... And then this morning, there's a friggin' baby crow out there trying to get grackles to feed him.
You're turning into that crazy bird lady of the neighborhood.
I know. And I've got so many things on my list already to do as we went over this morning. Pick up vitamins, give the dogs their flea meds, watch Sister Act.
Yeah.
There's already so much on the list.
So many things.
Yep. Oh, well, we'll see how this crow thing goes.
Anyway, I love you, crazy bird lady. So I got a story for you.
Oh, good.
Come on, kids. Pull your chair up round the radio. Uncle Jethro's going to weave a tale.
It's fireside chats.
Yeah, but with lots of death. When the number 4 reactor exploded at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant on April 26th, 1986, a colossal meltdown began. When it occurred, the first responders, as well as people living near Chernobyl in what's now Ukraine, had no idea what was happening. They didn't know that they were experiencing an event that would ultimately change their lives and the lives of their children. The effects of the Chernobyl disaster echoed around the world, of course, with long-term repercussions for wildlife, for environment, and for humans.
Quick question. Now, we just started watching Dark on Netflix. Is that where the inspiration for this came from?
Yes. You know me so well. Well, according to Wikipedia, here's what happened. The accident started during a safety test on a particular reactor. It was commonly used throughout the Soviet Union during the planned decrease of reactor power in preparation for an electrical test. The power unexpectedly dropped to a near zero level. A combination of unstable conditions and the reactor design flaws caused an uncontrollable nuclear chain reaction. A large amount of energy was suddenly released, vaporizing superheated cooling water and erupting the reactor core in a highly destructive steam explosion.
Oh, I didn't know it was a steam explosion.
It was radioactive steam.
That sounds terrible.
This was immediately followed by an open-air reactor core fire that released considerable airborne radioactive contamination for about 9 days. I didn't realize that it had gone on for that long.
Ugh.
It infected parts of the USSR, Western Europe, before finally being contained on May 4th. In 1986, the fire gradually released about the same amount of contamination as the initial explosion.
Wow. Quick question. I'm sorry. You said it was contained. Are we going to get into that more?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, because in my mind, I picture duct tape.
Yeah, well.
Because that's in Maine and in space, that's how you fix things.
That's true. I don't think anybody would argue that point. All you have to do is watch The Martian. As a result of the rising ambient radiation levels offsite, a 10-kilometer radius exclusion zone was created 36 hours after the accident. About 49,000 people were evacuated from the area. Shortly after that, the exclusion zone increased to 30 kilometers, and a further 68,000 people were evacuated from the wider area.
Wow.
Ranker says those who worked at the nuclear plant or lived in the surrounding areas, they tell haunting tales about what happened in the immediate aftermath of the Chernobyl disaster. There's a book out. It's called Voices from Chernobyl, The Oral History of a Nuclear Disaster. It's by Nobel Prize-winning author Svetlana Alexievich. So even though the initial explosion was obviously devastating, the chief engineer on duty believed the reactor's core had not been damaged. So employees were just told to keep working.
No.
When firefighters and first responders got there to contain the fire, they showed up without radiation protection gear because no one thought that the reactor had melted down.
I feel like better safe than sorry.
Yeah.
In situations involving radioactivity.
As this was happening in real time, massive amounts of radiation was pouring out of the exploded reactor. More than 100 people suffered from acute radiation poisoning. Dozens were dead within months.
Oh my gosh.
Radiation continued to leak and the wind spread it to the surrounding areas and ultimately around the world. Ludmila Ignatenko, the wife of one of the firemen, said in that book, quote, at 10 in the morning, a cameraman died. He was the first. On the first day, we learned that another one was left under the debris. They never did reach him. They buried him under the concrete. And we didn't know then that they were just the first ones.
Wow. That's interesting how that misunderstanding of what really had gone on changes your whole perspective on it. Like, oh, look, there was an accident. We're going to fix it. The end.
Right.
But instead it was, oh, look, there's an accident. This is going to affect everyone and everything for some time.
That's exactly right. So this is unfolding. What would be the best way for a government to deal with a major potential public health disaster?
Pretend that it isn't happening.
Ignore it. That's right. Tell the citizens that there's nothing to worry about while you're covering it up. The Soviet government refused to tell Pripyat citizens, that's the town right next to where Chernobyl was, they refused to tell them about the danger that they were in. Even after several additional explosions in the damaged reactor that same night, police officers just started showing up wearing gas masks in the streets. Citizens started to report symptoms, and understandably, this caused anxiety and confusion. The evacuation didn't even begin until the middle of the next day, more than 24 hours after the incident.
And that's precious time that they could have used
Yes.
to tamp down the effects on the population.
Ludmila Ignatenko goes on to say, quote, "It's night. On one side of the street, there are buses, hundreds of buses. They're already preparing the town for evacuation. And on the other side, hundreds of fire trucks. They came from all over. And the whole street covered in white foam. We're walking on it, just cursing and crying. Over the radio, they tell us they might evacuate the city for three to five days. So take warm clothes because you'll be living in the forest." Intense. Yeah. People were even glad. They were saying, oh, a camping trip, because they were not told how serious this
right.
is. We'll celebrate May Day like that. A break from the routine. People got barbecues ready. They took their guitars with them, their radios. Only the women whose husbands had been in the reactor were crying.
Oh.
So the government rushed to cover up the seriousness of what occurred at Chernobyl. And the order came from the very top, Mikhail Gorbachev. Gorbachev created a commission to investigate the explosion, but he did not tell the international community about the massive radiation leak. It was only after they measured radioactivity in Sweden on the 28th of April, and they were able to trace it back to Chernobyl, that the Soviets even acknowledged that there was an incident. And even then, they did not acknowledge its severity. By attempting to cover up the radioactive emissions still being released from the plant, they prevented their own citizens, and in fact the entire world, from dealing with the literal fallout. One citizen recalled, "We sat in front of the television for days waiting for Gorbachev to speak. The authorities didn't say anything. Only after the big holiday did Gorbachev come on and say, 'Don't worry, comrades, the situation is under control. It's nothing bad. People are still there, living, working. Everything is fine.' But even so, other countries began to suspect a nuclear disaster had occurred at Chernobyl. Soviet officials, even when they were confronted by international officials, stuck to the party line, claiming the incident was entirely under control. With reports circulating that a radioactive cloud was descending upon Europe and a core meltdown likely had occurred, the Soviet government said these were just examples of Western propaganda and fake news."
Whoa.
Soviet officials pointed to the 1979 incident at Three Mile Island in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
and claimed that the West was attempting to politicize the situation to make the Soviet Union look bad. But over time, the depths of Mikhail Gorbachev's deception became clear. The Soviets lied to their own citizens, too. According to a politician, Vladimir Matveevich Ivanov, "We got telegrams from the Central Committee, from the Regional Committee. They told us, quote, 'You must prevent panic.' And it's true, a panic is a frightening thing. Only during the war did they pay so much attention to news from the front as they did to the news from Chernobyl. There was a belief that people weren't killed by the radiation, but by the events. We had to prevent a panic." So after keeping the citizens in the dark about the explosion for more than a day, authorities gave the people of Pripyat about an hour to prepare for the evacuation. They told them to pack for a three-day trip. Most had no idea, though, that they would never, ever return to their home again.
Oh, my gosh.
Some even thought it was a vacation, like yeah. I was saying before. One citizen recalled, "All day on the radio, they were telling people to prepare for an evacuation. They'd take us away for 3 days. They would wash everything, check it over. The kids were told to take their school books. Still, my husband put our documents and our wedding photos into a briefcase. The only thing I took was a gauze kerchief in case the weather turned bad."
I can't even imagine how the realization that what we were told wasn't what was happening and you may not be able to go home again, and how slow and terrifying that must have been.
It must have been just day after day getting worse and worse and worse, to the point where you go, yeah, we're never going back.
Yeah.
The Soviet government finally sent in what they called liquidators. It's basically a cleanup crew. Ranker goes on to say, liquidators were in fact soldiers, firefighters, miners, even custodians. They were the ones responsible for covering up the core in concrete,
mm-hmm.
creating the sarcophagus, or they call it the elephant's foot, because that's what it looks like, just
okay.
a big pile of radioactive concrete. They were sending in professors who had degrees. They said the slogan was, "Fight the atom with a shovel." You had everybody. It didn't matter
yeah.
who. They would just indiscriminately choose people from the forest to come in and clean this mess up.
Wow.
One citizen said they didn't need to send all those people there to get radiation. What for? They needed specialists, not a lot of human material. I don't think that any of us doubted, though, that they'd put us in jail for insubordination if we did not go. Mm-hmm. The weird thing is, you know, when you think of Chernobyl, in, at least in my mind, you think of this mass evacuation, and you've seen pictures of what's left of the nearby towns and the city, just totally abandoned, amusement parks overgrown with trees and weeds. But the fact is, a lot of people never left. They stayed.
Oh.
One resident, Nadasha Burakova, explained why she decided to stay. "We could have left, but my husband and I thought about it and decided not to. We were afraid to. Here, we're all Chernobylites. We share the same memories. We have the same fate. Anywhere else, we're foreign. We're lepers. Everyone is used to the words Chernobylites, Chernobyl children, or Chernobyl refugees. But you don't know anything about it. You're afraid of us. You probably wouldn't let us out of here if you had your way. You'd put up a police cordon." Estimates of the deaths attributed to the disaster vary. The International Atomic Energy Agency, the United Nations, and the World Health Organization estimate about 9,000 deaths linked to radiation exposure. Other groups estimate the number significantly higher, perhaps up to 1 million. Although, well, that statistic is widely disputed.
I imagine it's impossible to track that. How can you even measure that?
I don't think that there's any way that we'll ever definitively know. The term Chernobylites is a derogatory term.
Oh.
These people who were exposed to radiation met with all sorts of social prejudice and pretty much like they were considered like lepers from days of old. We don't want you in our cities and towns. Now, the press got in on the whole fear-mongering thing. A journalist, Anatoly Shermansky, shared some of these rumors that were going around. Quote, "The Chernobylites are giving birth to children who have an unknown yellow fluid instead of blood."
Oh, jeez.
"There are scientists who insist that monkeys became intelligent because they lived near radiation. Children born in these three or four generations will be Einsteins. It's a cosmic experiment being carried out on us." Yeah, that must have been reassuring.
Sure.
The most dramatic result of the explosions at Chernobyl is, as I mentioned before, the elephant's foot. Mm. It's where the first blast formed like an enormous mass of nuclear fuel and melted concrete. And then they came in and they poured more concrete on top of reactor number four.
So not duct tape, got it.
Yeah, not duct tape. And it is still so radioactive that if you stood next to it for 5 minutes, you'd drop dead.
Wow.
Still to this day. The elephant's foot has burned. The current state of the elephant's foot, it has burned through the basement of the plant into the ground, where it continues to burn deeper and deeper into the earth.
Do you think that eventually will mess with our, like, axis?
We're in an uncharted area here. That's, you remember the movie China Syndrome?
No.
That's what that was about, was that it would melt right through the earth to China.
Oh.
That was, you know.
Oh. Well, that would make some travel easier.
Yeah.
Shoop.
Of course, the main concerns right now are the contamination of groundwater, and it could spark a brand new Chernobyl-related health crisis.
Well, it's possible that it's happening right now, and we just don't know it.
Yeah,
Maybe the severe influx of Karens is due to radiation. We don't know.
We don't know. We should check and see if they have yellow blood. Anyway, that's kind of what it was like to be in Chernobyl or near Chernobyl when all that shit went down 34 years ago.
Well, that's terrible. I don't remember that happening at all. And so to me, it's like ancient history.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone says 34 years ago, I go, oh, yeah, that's right.
It wasn't
that. Was not that long ago.
Right.
Huh.
And now, that thing in the middle.
Today's thing in the middle, once again, from our Freaks group on Facebook, Kimberly posted, "Tell a lie your ex said." Oof, this could get rough. Number 5. Tia wrote, "My ex once told me he was the stand-in drummer for Slipknot." I laughed hysterically.
Number 4, Linda writes, "He said, that's not Viagra, it's Aleve."
Kate writes, "My therapist said it was your fault I cheated." Oh. My.
Wow.
Wow.
Number 2, Andrea says, "My dick works all the time."
And number 1, Karen writes, "He said I would never make it without him. I would be homeless and eating out of the trash. Oh, I have a great career. I raised a great kid alone. and I just bought my forever home. Boom, mic drop.
The Box of Oddities with Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth.
You hear Kat and I talk a lot about Aura frames, and there's a reason for that. We live in Ecuador, and our family is all over the place. In fact, Kat right now is up visiting her mom, and when I say up, I mean Maine. We got her an Aura frame so we could share photos and videos from any device, and they'll instantly appear on the frame, which makes it easy because she's getting up there in years. It's easy to set up. It takes about 2 minutes to set up a frame using the Aura app, and it's the perfect gift for Mother's Day. Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. It's super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app, and if you're giving an Aura as a gift, you can even personalize the frame with preloaded photos and memories. It is the perfect gift for Mother's Day. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get 30% off free shipping and their best-selling frame. That's A-U-R-A, frames.com. Use code ODDITIES at checkout to save. That's A-U-R-A, frames.com, and use code ODDITIES at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
The podcast now in a convenient travel size that fits in your pocket or purse. And in three new scents. Freshly cut coconut, summer breeze, and
something died in the attic.
This is The Box of Oddities.
Zach sent us an email at curator@theboxofoddities.com. Kat and JG, I was listening to the latest episode, Box 241, on my way home from work. I pulled into a Chick-fil-A to get my meal, dropped off curbside, when this elderly lady handed me the wonderful bag of chicken that had been anointed by God. At that exact same moment, all you hear is Kat yell, "We demand a leader with a solid butthole!" The look in that sweet grandma's eyes was one of confusion and disgust. Today I learned that y'all should stay in my earbuds and not be blasted through my truck stereo. Love y'all. Keep flying that freak flag. I've got mine flying proudly down here in Orlando. Sorry about that. So once again, I reach over with my award-winning finger and press this button.
What you got for me? What you got for me? What you got for me?
So long. Can we get an abridged version of
sure,
that?
Like this?
What you...
Yeah. Okay. I love it.
All righty.
So my friend Sarah shared a story on FB that gave me the full body shivers. Heebies all over the place. Like laying in bed and going, ooh.
I like where this is going.
So it was a post about the Guilford Fire Department in Connecticut, congratulating them on their amazing rescue of a Guilford resident who fell down a 20 to 30 foot well inside a house.
Oh my God, I think I saw a headline on this.
A new tenant was moving into this home that was built in 1843. And their friend, who was helping them very generously, fell through the floor into the abyss.
Oh my God.
Of a 20 to 30 foot well, splashing into extremely cold water that was well over the victim's head.
Whoa. Now, in one way, that's good because it broke his fall. On the other hand, I would immediately imagine that it was full of eels.
Eels. Yep. Wow. Okay. Yep.
All I need is eels in my anus.
Eels in your eyes. Eels in your anus.
Eels.
A few years ago, I had friends at my old workplace, and we were kind of just tootling about the building, and she had her dog with us, and the dog ran over into a kind of boggy area behind the building. Now, it was winter, so the bog was frozen, but not enough, and the dog fell through.
Ooh.
Of course, I didn't know what was going on in that bog or how deep it was or, you know, any of that. So I was very concerned about the dog. So I ran over and jumped in. And when I jumped in, I hit some sort of piece of metal, like I'm guessing it was rebar.
Oh my God.
That was just sticking up out in a, and it scraped all the way up my leg and it was gross. But anyway, we got the dog. It was fine. So in my head, I don't think eels, I think stuff.
Like sharpened steaks.
Yes, it's exactly. I think I've seen Indiana Jones maybe too many times. Mm.
Which, by the way, is impossible, but go ahead.
So the house was built in 1843, and there was a renovation and an addition added onto the house in 81. At some point, this well was covered with simple wood flooring. There was no subfloor. There was no well cap. It was just a well hole covered with what I can only imagine was like 1970s style floral laminate.
Which is like 3 millimeters thick.
Now, they said it was wood flooring, but still.
Yeah.
This is how it works in my brain.
What kind of an idiot does that?
I don't know.
You know?
How does that happen? That's fine. We'll just put some flooring over it.
Yeah.
Anyway, initially, the fire department received a 911 call for a fall victim. They were thinking like, oh, someone tripped and fell down the stairs.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
Someone took a digger in the bathroom or whatever. No, it was a bit more serious, 20 to 30 feet into the abyss. So they sent Guilford firefighters in to retrieve the well. They were treading water for only about 25 minutes. The fire people got there super fast and got him out really quickly.
But that must have been an incredibly long 25 minutes.
Yep.
Every time something brushed against my leg, I'd be expecting an eel attack.
You don't know how much further down it goes. You don't know what was dumped in there before Dum Dum just put some wood flooring over there. You don't know what's going on.
No.
You don't know what's going on. So my whole body reacted to that. The victim suffered only minor injuries and was transferred to the hospital to be checked out. But it was like scrapes and bumps and, you know, the kind of thing that will happen when you fall down a well. But no big deal. Guilford Fire Department did make note that some old homes do have hazards that are not upgraded to current code.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So, for sure.
Yeah.
So that got me thinking, hey, wasn't there some kid that fell into a well once?
I remember on The Simpsons, they were sending their love down the well. You've never
seen The Simpsons.
Oh, my God. How did we end up together? I think Bart threw his walkie-talkie down the well and was pretending there was a kid down the well named Timmy. And Sting showed up and wrote a song, "We're Sending Our Love Down the Well."
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because it became this big media event.
Sure. Mm. Well, very similar to what went on here, except...
Not cartoons.
Yep.
Okay.
And not a walkie-talkie.
Mm-hmm.
Baby Jessica. So it's 1987 in Midland, Texas. Baby Jessica was at her aunt's house with her family. Her aunt Jamie ran a daycare center out of her home.
I remember this so well.
Do you? Because I don't at all.
Well, I can tell you what month it was. It was October.
Wow, that's really well. What year was Chernobyl?
86.
Oh, wow. Look at us. Once again.
Mm-hmm.
Ran in the same
time frame, anyway. I only remember that because I had just started a new job and it was all over the news.
It was. It was October 14th. Well done. Freak. So anyway, Jessica's aunt, Jamie Moore, ran a daycare center out of her home. And that morning, there were five kids there. Jessica was playing with the other four children in the backyard under the supervision of her mother, Sissy. The phone rang. Sissy briefly went inside to go answer the phone. And when she came back out, the kids were screaming and Jessica was nowhere to be found. She soon discovered that baby Jessica had fallen into a 8-inch diameter well and had become trapped deep down in its shaft. The family says they have no idea how this happened because the well hole had been covered by a large rock so that this kind of thing wouldn't happen. It's not the kind of rock that they said these kids could have moved. They don't know what happened or how. But either way, 8 inches, baby Jessica's all up in there. So rescue workers came and assessed that she was about 22 feet below the ground.
I didn't remember it was that far down.
And the entire ordeal is immediately being covered live on CNN. This is the nation's first and at that time the only 24-hour news network. Jessica was quickly dubbed everybody's baby. Midland Fire and Police Departments came to the scene and enlisted the help of a variety of local, often out of work, oil drillers. So obviously they can't just shimmy down this shaft and go and get her. It's a very unique situation. It's not like, you know, when you fall down a well inside your house covered by plywood. It's you're not getting down there, basically.
No. 8 inches.
8 inches.
Just the thought of not being able to move my arms.
Oh, you just wait. The plan was to dig a parallel shaft alongside this well hole and then drill a second shaft that would connect the two. All right, fine. No big deal. So all they got to do is drill down big enough for a person to get shimmy down and then drill across. Okay, fine. Except what they thought was going to be a quick process was not. None of the tools that they had were sufficient for this project. And they discovered that the tools that they did have that would work, like a jackhammer, they couldn't use to do the drilling horizontally. That's not how that works. They were in kind of a bind. Rescue workers were pumping oxygen into the well to make sure that baby Jessica had the air that she needed to breathe, and they were in constant communication with her. Now, of course, she's a baby, so she's not able to fully, like, describe what's happened. She's just able to cry and mumble a little bit. She's trying to communicate. They're trying to communicate. It's not going great. So a day went by. A whole day of these parents standing nearby this well hole, just hearing people saying, this isn't working.
Wow. I got frustrated when the cable guy said that, when he was installing our cable.
That's right. Like I said, a lot of out-of-work oil drillers were coming to help, and a roofing contractor named Ron Short came to help. He was born without a collarbone because of a genetic disorder, and so he could collapse his shoulders to work in cramped corners. He can actually, like, touch his shoulders.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So he was like, I can make my way down the shaft, I betcha. And they were like, yeah, we're not going to do that. Because then if you're stuck, then we have two people that we have to, you know. No, it's not happening.
Sure.
But even though they did consider it, especially after some time had passed and they were starting to, you know, get a little freaked out, but they did not use that. Though one report did say that he helped to clear tunneling during the process.
So he was able to put his skill to use.
He was able to help, just not in the way that he initially offered to. He was just going to, like, dive down in there.
Wow.
Which, no. And then I think about, like, these hips. Nope. Like, that's one thing. Like, I should consume less food because what if someone falls down a well and
that's
they need
true.
My help? Instead, I'm just going to be like, no, sorry, I'm only good for twerking. No. So anyway.
We all have our own unique skill set, sweetie.
So rescue workers were reassured when they heard Baby Jessica singing the theme song from Winnie the Pooh.
Oh.
As long as she was still singing, they knew that she was still breathing. Obviously, like I said, she couldn't communicate and say, yeah, I'm still fine. But when they heard her humming, Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, they knew that she was okay.
Yeah. So, see, now I immediately go to the mind of a parent.
Yeah.
Jessica's parent standing there. And everybody's telling us for hours now, we can't get your kid out.
Mm-hmm.
We're having, nothing's working. And then you hear her humming Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So 45 hours later.
45 hours.
The shaft that they were tunneling was completed. Midland Fire Department paramedic Robert O'Donnell was ultimately able to inch his way into the tunnel and make that connecting cut, where he was through a very small hole able to use a mirror to see her leg. So he increased the size of the hole, kept digging out debris, and they inflated two industrial-type balloons underneath her so that she couldn't fall any further because there was more to fall.
Oh, my God. Oh,
so,
man.
She wasn't at the bottom of the well. She was kind of encased in this weird pile of debris that had stashed in the well. So they got that support underneath so that they knew that she was at least secure in that right, increased the size of the hole to snag her, and then realized that the leg that they saw was actually just her one leg. She was trapped on either side of this debris, so they couldn't get her because she was actually on the other side of the debris. Just because the way that her leg had been jammed in here, they thought, oh, here she is. But she wasn't right there. She was stuck in this debris.
Mm.
So they thought, like, this is it. We've got her. And no, it wasn't for another 10 hours that they were able to use a water jet cutter, which was new technology at the time, and forceps and lubricating gel. And they were able to jimmy her out of there. At 5:30 p.m., they used a paramedic board to strap her on and used ropes and cables to wrestle her free from the confines of the well.
And this had been how many?
56 hours.
56 hours. That poor little girl.
Robert O'Donnell handed her to fellow paramedic Steve Forbes, who carried her up to safety before passing her to paramedic Bill Queen, who carried her to a waiting ambulance. There was a photograph of McClure being rescued and carried by one of those paramedics that actually won the Pulitzer Prize for spot news photography. The child, who had weighed 21 pounds, now weighed 17 pounds. She had a pretty significant wound on her forehead where she had been in such a position that her forehead was rubbing up against the side of the well.
Right.
She wasn't moving around. She wasn't like she had room to like fix her position. She was jammed up against the side of this well, her head rubbing up against it the whole time. And one of her legs had hit the wall and been jerked upward. So one of her feet was up by her head.
I can't even.
Dr. Carolyn Rode, who was actually the doctor who delivered Jessica, said that the baby was in critical condition at that time, but she had not suffered any broken bones, which is nuts. She was very concerned about the child's leg due to lack of circulation.
Yeah.
Obviously, your leg's all jammed up and ugh. She was also very concerned about the child's long-lasting emotional trauma. Surgeons did have to amputate a toe due to gangrene, which had set in due to loss of circulation while baby Jessica was in the well. She had 15 surgeries, but has no firsthand memory of this event.
Like we've said so many times,
the brain's amazing.
The brain is amazing.
As baby Jessica grew older, she didn't remember anything about those 3 days trapped in a well. She didn't even learn about the story until she was 5 and she saw an episode of Rescue 911 about her.
Oh my God.
She saw this reenactment and she started to cry and she said that it must have been so scary for that little girl. And her parents were like, yeah, it was scary for that little girl. It was you.
I just got serious goosebumps when you said that. Holy crap.
So these days, Jessica has a family. She is married to a dude named Danny. They've got kids, and I'm sure they're not allowed around any Wells. Jessica works as a special education teacher's aide at a local elementary school. Danny is a foreman at a pipe supply company. When she turned 25 in 2011, she got a trust fund because during this three-day media circus surrounding her being trapped in this well, people were reaching out wanting to do anything that they could.
Right.
And they were accepting donations. And a huge amount of money was collected for this baby. It got up to like $1.2 million.
Holy crap.
At one point. Now, unfortunately, a lot of that was lost in the 2008 financial crisis because she wasn't able to have taken it out at that point. But what was left after that helped in the purchase of Jessica's home, which is less than 2 miles from the site of the well.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. Finally, a story that ends happily. That's great.
Well, it's not entirely happily. I mean, there are some long-lasting effects for some people, I'm sure, her parents.
Yeah, yeah.
And a rescue worker, Robert O'Donnell, suffered severe post-traumatic stress from the incident and ended up taking his own life in the 90s.
No. Oh, no.
Because 3 days of it being your job to save a baby.
While the entire world is watching.
Exactly.
And you're right. CNN was it
at
that time. It was the only 24-hour news source. And it was an ongoing, it was a running dialogue. That's why I remember it. I was in the process of starting a new job, and it was just on in the background everywhere all the time.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It actually reminded me a lot of when the space shuttle exploded. It was on TVs and stores, and people talked about it all the time. It was the big global event.
Yeah, one of the articles that I read mentioned that between the Challenger and baby Jessica is what led to news 24/7, like us demanding it.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't surprise me. Now I wish they'd make it go away. Please.
So anyway, that is two creepy well stories.
Well, well.
You're welcome.
We want to welcome all of the new subscribers to the Box of Oddities premium channel. We appreciate you supporting the Box of Oddities. You can do so by going to our website, theboxofoddities.com. By supporting us, you get a bunch of cool stuff. You get the episodes a day early. You get them without any ads. You get access to the back channel, which is if you want to, you know, ask us a question directly, we will respond to it. We try to respond to everything on the back channel. And a bonus episode once a month, which reminds me, we have to do one quick. We're coming up on bonus episode time.
Yay!
So now's a good time to jump in on the premium channel and become a member of the Order of Freaks.
Go to theboxofoddities.com. So many details about so many things, including the Order of Freaks right there.
And we look forward to seeing you next time.
Until then, keep flying that freak flag.
Fly it proudly, you beautiful freak.
And so, let it be known that the Box of Oddities belongs to you. And its fate is in your hands. Therefore, it's been requested by those to whom I report to beseech you for assistance. We ask but one thing of you, to provide a 5-star rating and a positive review. True, that is 2 things. However, 'tis merely a 5-star rating and a positive review. Also, subscribe to us. Okay, so 3 things is all we ask. 3 things and 3 things only. Henceforth, the Box of Oddities commits to the telling of stories. Stories of the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected. We wish to offer our deeply felt gratitude and appreciation for your patronage. TheBoxOfOddities.com. Copyright 2020, all rights reserved.
Is that your belly again?
Yes.
Have you ever wondered how inbred the Habsburgs really were? What women in the past used for birth control? Or what Queen Victoria's 9 children got up to? On the History Tea Time podcast, I profile remarkable queens and LGBTQ plus royals, explore royal family trees, and delve into women's medical history and other fascinating topics. Join me every Tuesday for History Tea Time, wherever fine podcasts are enjoyed.
If you like this podcast, can we recommend another one? It's called Big Picture Science. You can hear it wherever you get your podcasts, and its name tells part of the story. The big picture questions and the most interesting research in science.
Seth and I are the hosts. Seth is a scientist. I am Molly, and I'm a science journalist. And we talk to people smarter than us, and we have fun along the way. The show is called Big Picture Science, and as Seth said, you can hear it wherever you get your podcasts.